This is The Book and the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
As we pass program number 2000 for The Book and the Spade, we're taking some time to review the most important story in biblical archaeology from the past century, the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Michael Wise, professor of Hebrew Bible and Ancient Languages and scholar-in-residence at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, is looking forward to seeing the results of a recently announced 5-year study into the scrolls, directed by Mladen Popovich at the University of Groningen in Holland. This study is not so much into the content of the scrolls, but the scrolls themselves, their makeup, their sources. The scrolls were written on parchment, papyrus, and leather.
The average ordinary scroll, but take a 12-inch piece of leather and inscribe that, you've got a little scroll. That's an ordinary person's annual salary right there. So writing and reading were, to some extent, either communal or rich people's province. The ordinary person couldn't afford books and would only see books or hear books if they went to the synagogue or some comparable kind of communal gathering place.
In the ancient world, most people did not read silent to themselves. If they were reading something, they were reading it out loud.
That's right. Silent reading was considered strange, and it wasn't normally done. Even scribes, as they wrote, would say out loud what they were copying. So they would read it, they would write it, they would say it. They're engaging all the senses in the production. And when we look at texts, there's a lot of mistakes in ancient writing. Not a lot, but they're common. Let's say it that way. And they're caused by a failure of one of the senses. Your eye moves from where you're supposed to be to the, you skip some words and you write there before you leave everything out in the middle. There's a name for that. It's called parablepsis. You hear something wrongly, and so you write a word that is the wrong word because it sounds similar, that your hand moves wrongly. All the different senses are involved in scribal error as well as scribal production.
So there are errors in the Dead Sea Scrolls.
There are. The main scroll that we think about with regard to that is the so-called Great Isaiah Scroll, most famous of perhaps of all the Dead Sea Scrolls because it's so well preserved. As you know, Gordon, I think it's been on display at the Shrine of the Book.
Just this year,
the original, as opposed to this facsimile copy. And it has scribal errors all over, and they're repaired in various ways by the second and third scribes who worked their way through it. Some of them are indeed up and down the edges, and there seems to be patterns to it at certain points.
Well, you mentioned earlier work of Mladen Popovich. He has kind of stretched the timeline of the scrolls. There was a big news story last year about this use of an artificial intelligence program called Enoch that suggested some scrolls were written earlier, particularly intriguingly related to the book of Daniel, because evangelical scholars believe it was written several centuries earlier. And you said that that's fairly new and scholars are still working through that.
That's right, Gordon. The technology that he used was as you say, AI examining in a microscopic way the strokes of the scribal hands, trying to figure out in a complex kind of algorithm what that indicated in terms of the development of the script over time. There's a lot of judgment calls being made there. Obviously, AI is being taught. AI only can learn what somebody teaches it. That's where the attack point would be for the results. How accurately has this program been taught? How much can we validate the methodology that underlies the process that gave these results? That's what's going to be vetted. As you understand, with most fields of research, ideas are connected to people and their careers. So they are very protective of the older ideas, if they are older, that they have published themselves when somebody comes along with a new one, because it's not just abstract. They're going to be rendered a footnote at best if their ideas are wrong, and they don't like that. So oftentimes, major change happens at a generational break.
So evangelical scholars who see Daniel written earlier were rushed to embrace this new evidence, but others are more cautious.
That's right. I think evangelicals should also be cautious about embracing it, not because we believe Daniel's written later, but just because we are good scholars. scholars should generally be cautious, not rushing to embrace new ideas, but weighing them and thinking about them, especially when they're new. Now, that's the appropriate way to respond to it. That is to say, well, maybe that's right. Let me think about that. What else has got to be thought about? How do we examine this? What are the angles here? What is the premise upon which the process has proceeded? Is the premise accurate? Those kinds of questions. If you're rushing to embrace it simply because it indicates an early date for Daniel, that's a process whereby you've chosen your answer before you've chosen the research process.
And that's a mistake that scholars have made in the past and other occasions, because we too quickly embrace the findings because they support our views of the biblical record.
Yeah. And that's why other scholars outside evangelical circles often think that the things that evangelical scholars write are not worth reading, because they don't think that it's well conceived. It's not starting in the right place. It's starting with the answer.
It's a fine line that you have to be careful. And if you base your work on good science, as well as a good understanding of the Bible, you're in better territory.
Yes, you are. And if you argue well with good reasons for what you say. The question of Daniel is very complex. There's a lot of different ways of looking at the dating of Daniel. The nature of the Aramaic that's in, which tends to be later than the time you might think if Daniel was written in the early time. But then there's the question of modernization of over the time of its being passed down. That is, people simply update the language. And these kind of arguments, they get very complex. So arriving at a definitive answer on that, that everybody is kind of forced to acknowledge, I don't see that happening, no matter what the evidences are, because of the complexity of these things. As some people know, among the Dead Sea Scrolls, there are quite a few so-called pseudo-Daniel writings. That is to say, writings claiming to be written by Daniel, that is, in the name of Daniel, with additional visions and interpretations that aren't in the Bible. And there were additional writings associated with Daniel that came down to us in Greek. Those are in the Catholic Bibles. The Apocrypha have additional stories about Daniel. Many of the listeners may know this. So there was a Daniel tradition that's broader than what we have in the Bible. And that has to be taken into account when you're talking about these kind of questions if you're a scholar.
If you just joined us, we're talking with Michael Wise, professor of Hebrew and ancient languages and scholar in residence at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. And we're talking about the Dead Sea Scrolls. I remember when we first talked decades ago, you mentioned that the Dead Sea Scrolls community used a different calendar. And I guess there's about 20 scrolls that do deal with calendars and astronomy. In those days, there was a lunar solar calendar that was used, but the Qumran community seemed to have more of a strict 364-degree calendar.
There's a history to this whole question of research, and some recent writings have argued for what you just said. That is that they started with a pure 364-day calendar and then evolved towards a lunisolar calendar, which is, in fact, what we actually see more than we see the pure one in the Dead Sea Scroll writings that have to do with calendar. What's going on there? Well, the 364-day calendar is a way of reading the creation narrative, really. That is to say, it makes sense that if the world was created in 7 days, therefore a week is 7 days long, that a year would be a number of days divisible by seven. Well, 365 isn't. And 365 and a quarter, which is what we think is approximately the period it takes for the Earth to circle the sun, that's certainly not working as a division of seven. So 364 is 7 times 52. That's where you get the number. That is a pure solar calendar. There's no strong evidence for its use. Instead, what we find is we're dealing in writings that are from a period where they've realized that doesn't work. It doesn't work because it gets out of line with the actual seasons, the seasonal changes, which are, of course, solar, but not 364. Over a period of time, you fall behind the seasons. And so after 10 or 15 years, you're actually a whole season off in your calendar. And that's a problem when you're in a religious culture where you're offering sacrifices that are related to harvest. That was, of course, the ancient Israelite situation. So the calendar, if it did in fact start off as pure, after a fairly short time, wasn't working. So what do you do? There were a couple of options that or a couple of answers that seem to have emerged. One of them is you intercalate. That is, you add days to make it realign. Now you're talking about a kind of lunisolar calendar at that point. Right? You're adding days in. The mainline Jewish calendar at the time we're talking about was a 354 or 355-day calendar. That's the Jewish calendar of today. It was already on the scene. And it was competitive, as it were, with the pure solar calendar we're talking about, it having come from Babylon. The 354, 355-day calendar was the Babylonian calendar, which is 29 and 30-day alternating months. And you end up with 354. Well, that's 10 days off, again, with regard to the sun. So you've got all these issues of alignment. One response is to use the combination of the lunar and the solar calendars to arrive at something that's workable for both of them, so to speak. The lunisolar calendars, and those underlie most of the Dead Sea Scrolls. But another possible answer is to say, look, the stars themselves are in rebellion against God. They're supposed to be doing 364, but they're not doing it. That's why we've got this problem. That's actually the argument of the Book of Enoch at one point, that the stars themselves, the Book of Enoch, First Enoch to be technical, is a part of that is arguing or at least presupposing the 364-day calendar. So, yeah, this is another complex question. Most people's eyes roll back in their head pretty quickly.
But they were apparently wrestling with it if they had 20 different scrolls that were addressing the issue.
Yeah, they have 20 different scrolls. They're not per se necessarily addressing the issue, but they are making assumptions or working on aspects of how to make it work practically. And some of them, interestingly enough, are written in secret scripts that kind of suggest that this is arcane. You're not supposed to know this unless you're well-trained in the and you know these special scripts. And yeah, it's an interesting area. I've written quite a bit on calendars, Gordon, over the years, and I've learned that you talk briefly about this topic.
Yeah, that was another story last year. Another scholar believed he had cracked the code on one of those cryptic scripts that was used to write some of the Dead Sea Scrolls.
There's two of the cryptic scripts. Cryptic script A has long been known, but cryptic script B has not been cracked, and that was the claim, that that was now cracked. And that might be right. The problem with cryptic script B is we don't even have representations for all the letters of the alphabet.
The Dead Sea Scrolls. There's many levels of research, and we will discuss one more of the mysteries of the scrolls in our next program. Our guest, Michael Wise, is professor of Hebrew Bible and Ancient Languages and scholar in residence at University of Northwestern St. Paul. Amongst the latest breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority on our website, we do have the latest news on the Dead Sea Scrolls. You can see that at radioscribe.com. We also have information about Artifacts, our biblical archaeology news magazine. That's at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Thanks for tuning in. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through biblical archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.